welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark, Deep Blue Sea Hoffmeyer, and joining me is Adam, Cliffhanger Hodgins, and Megan Swift Hoffmeyer.
Is that a reference to Taylor Swift? Because I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's your gangster nickname. Because everyone in this film, Cold Pursuit, has gangster nicknames.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and also, when I threaten somebody, I only give them half the threat, and then I come back a day later and let them know the rest of it.
Whoa. So you give them the cliff and then hanger?
I'm like, I'm going to punch you so hard that you're not going to, and then I walk away. And I'm like, going to feel your feet. Like, I just come back and finished it. I leave everything a cliffhanger.
You cannot.
It's my trademark.
You cannot. That's whole thing. I didn't even get that. Oh, my gosh. I was thinking, like, to hang them from a cliff and then leave them there and come back.
No. I thought it was a pretty obvious joke, actually.
Well, in my head, I was just so stuck on the Rennie Harlan classic that we, you know, I was just thinking cliffhanger. But, you know, you got to be careful. All these people in these movies, they roll in groups of at least two. So the person you're with can't be someone that's like, when I come back tomorrow, I'm going to. And the guy in the background goes, kick you in the face. Like, no.
I'd hate that guy.
Yeah, exactly. So you just, he does it on purpose, right? He or she, they do it on purpose. And so listen.
My calling card.
Your car? Guess what? He's like, he put a bomb in it. I'm like, no! Stop!
You definitely don't want to be the brave guy that goes alone, because that doesn't work out for anybody in this movie.
Yeah, even the gift carrier. The delivery guy.
Even the brother, I mean, he goes it alone. And that doesn't end well either.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, before we get into this, because, oh boy, we're going to get into this. I also want to say that up here in Canada, we've had the hottest 2 days in, like, the last 6 years. Wow. And so I'm talking about Cold Pursuit on literally the hottest evening that we've had in this country for the longest time. But to fully understand how great this movie is, and it's like, beyond great, we need to look at Liam Neeson and his career trajectory. Because he's a journeyman actor at this point in time. Would you agree with that? Like, he kind of does whatever Liam Neeson wants to do. And he's kind of become an institution bigger than being an actor.
It's become a Liam Neeson picture, as opposed to just he pops up in whatever role he can get. Now it's a Liam Neeson's movie.
Well, and that's right. And so you look back at his early work, and he was like an Excalibur as like a bit player with Patrick Stewart, right? That he was there. And then to the point where he's even like in Episode One, where he's like playing a Jedi and he's doing that. Schindler's List. What was the NRA movie he was in?
Michael Collins. Rob Roy.
Mm-hmm. Rob Roy. Like, he played all these like major movies, big characters. But then I'm going to say around Taken, around that time, was when he just became like, Liam Neeson's, we're going to watch like a badass revenge movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of became his thing. Have you guys seen The Honest Thief?
Yeah, saw The Honest Thief.
Yeah, so even in that, where you're like, oh, he's a bank robber. Oh, no, it's an intense revenge movie. Like, it quickly changes to like, oh, this is him just doing this bit. And so when you see the trailer and you see the title of Cold Pursuit and you read the synopsis of like, oh, his son, like, not to spoil it, but like his son dies and he takes revenge on an entire crime organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, so they just changed out son for daughter for Taken. Like, it's just the same thing. He's going to do his bit. And you go into this movie thinking it's going to be this no-nonsense, bare-knuckle brawl. And then you get maybe the funniest movie I saw last year.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not that.
No.
As much as it is that, it's not that. And it's a big bait and switch. And you're like, Liam Neeson, well done.
Super dark comedy.
We watched this movie and just laughed at the dark humor. I mean, okay.
I think at first we sort of looked at it and we went, are we supposed to laugh at this? And then some of the gags just kept going and you're like, this is really funny.
The title sequence of like the graves, whenever anybody would die at the end of that scene, like that joke kept getting, and at the end when there was like 30 names on the screen after the big shootout, I was like, the payoff to that gag was worth everything that this movie was.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of a nod to what the original version in order of disappearance.
Yeah. No, it was, they're basically a shot for shot. Can you hear my cat meowing? Because I think it's purring. Our cat Stella is just purring so loud right now. Can you hear it,
Adam? I can't.
Oh, I was hoping I could have an entire podcast backed with Stella's
She's
purring.
She's so cute. can hear it.
So that's a... But if you can hear it out there listening, just know that we have an adorable 10-year-old calico cat that's sitting right next to us purring very loudly. It's kind of nice. I love it. But so this movie, In Order of Disappearance, it was directed by the same guy, Hans Mullen. I watched it today. It has the same cinematographer. I mean, basically same story structure, same character names, same shots. Like, Philip Ogard directed it, or was a cinematographer on it. And it's, like, I think, why I think this movie is so good, like you said, Adam, it's a bait and switch, where this was just a Norwegian film to begin with. It was a European film with that sort of dark sense of humor. I think the Europeans sometimes do that really well. They blend this dark humor. And sometimes that doesn't translate over here in the States because you get a different director, a different screenwriter. There's different sensibilities. But no, this director came over here and directed it with the same cinematographer and essentially not the same backgrounds. I mean, there's two completely different countries and continents, but very similar vistas. So I think this movie is one of the rare remakes that is able to capture the essence of the original and still just be funny and not forced. I mean, the finale of this movie features so a guy who's been gliding through the mountains and then he slides into a snowplow and just gets demolished. That's the ending of this film. And then you see his title card pop up and he dies.
Right. And that's the end.
It just makes me, so happy. And I was so happy when you messaged me, Adam, and said, Mark, you know, so every now and again, we've been doing this for probably 3 years, 2 years, three years. Sometimes Adam will message me and then he'll just say a movie, like Cold Pursuit Thoughts. And I just went, yes. Because Megan, I love it. I knew that, like, this is a movie for us. Also, I also brought up Cliffhanger earlier because this is our trilogy Mountain Mayhem. Cliffhanger, Icebreaker, and now Cold Pursuit.
I call it the Frostbite Trilogy.
The Frostbite Trilogy. Or Hard Powder. As this movie is working.
Hard Powder.
What's a better name? Hard Powder or Cold Pursuit?
Cold Pursuit.
Ooh. Yeah.
So, I like Cold Pursuit because it's just really kind of, it's funny.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. Here's the
thing. Hot Pursuit.
I didn't even
Mark is that. Not picking up any of the, like, obvious jokes tonight where it's hey, Mark, why the chicken cross the road? And you're I don't know, but I'm very concerned about this chicken.
Wait, why is this chicken crossing the road? And is there a possum nearby? Because I don't want either of them getting hit.
Oh man, that possum. We'll talk about that later.
Oof, yeah.
That story. But I think, Cold Pursuit works two times because you hear the name Cold Pursuit and you're like, oh, like this is going to be a badass hot pursuit. Like they're trying to make it like 90s awesome. And then you watch the movie, you're like, oh, it's a joke. Like it's a joke. This whole movie is just like a dark, twisted joke. It works twice. It's so good.
I think the part that really sold it for me is when Nels and Grace Coxman go to the coroner to identify their son Kyle, and there's a 36-second long shot of a tech trying to raise the gurney, and it's just this awful squeaky noise, and it's this really morbid scene, but it's so funny because it goes on for so long.
Well, it's meant to, like, in every other movie that has that dialogue on the script page, it's an emotional heart jerk move. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, it's like it's played off for laughs.
It goes on long enough too that you at first you go, are they kidding? And then it just keeps going and you go, oh no, this is hilarious.
36 seconds is commitment. And it's also really funny because there's a 19 second scene where a lift gate is going up when they were putting White Bull's son into the back of a truck. So we have a 36 second scene with one son, and then we have a 19 second scene with another son, and it's just, it's beautiful. And it's just, it's kind of mean, and it's bleak, and you're laughing about death. But once again, I think the everyone was on board with this. I think they understood the tone, and even the score, I think, sells a lot of the humor in this as well. And it's just, you're right, it was such a pleasant surprise, Adam, watching this, because you get Nonstop, where Liam Neeson's is framed on a plane. You get
the commuter.
Yeah, you get Commuter. Liam Neeson's framed on a train. what's the other one where he's with Diane Kruger and then he gets framed again? He keeps getting framed in movies. He got Unknown. He got framed in that.
Oh,
and then run all night. I think he was framed in that one, too. Or he was catching killers. I don't know. But he was running all night. People were going after him. So you're just thinking,
right.
You're right. This is going to be chill factor. This is, I don't know, hard rain, but with a lot of snow.
I also want to say that if you look at Taken, which is like the cast that all of those movies come from, he's extremely capable. His character is like the most trained. Like it's the scene where
he
it's like,
a
I have
skills.
I don't have money, but I know how to kill you lots, is what he's saying on the phone, right?
Yeah.
And in this movie, he's just a snowplow driver,
mm-hmm.
and he acts real tough, but he's not super capable.
What I like about him is when
he has to try.
When he first throws that body into the water, the first body that he throws, Speedo.
Over the very tall waterfall?
Very tall. He almost falls in.
That's almost a Batman Forever waterfall.
And I just love that he almost falls in. But I think what's refreshing about him is you know he's a hunter, so he can shoot. And then you know his brother and dad were mob enforcers, so I guess he has a certain tough pedigree in him. So he's a big burly man, but he's not Liam Neeson from Taken, and it's really refreshing to watch.
He knows how to get rid of a body, he just has never done it.
Exactly.
Well, when he fights Santa on the side of the road, he's out of breath.
Oh,
and Santa's just laughing at him because he's like, you're a tired old man.
Right. Yeah.
And then he shoots him in the head.
And then he shoots him in the head, and it's fantastic. And then he gets rid of that body as well, right? Like it's unreal. But again, I was halfway through this movie where I was like, am I enjoying this, or is this am I enjoying it for the right reasons? Like, is this as entertaining as I think it is? And then I'm like, oh, this is exactly what the filmmaker wanted me to do. I felt like, you know, in Andy Kaufman's Man in the Moon, where it shows him making that documentary, his TV special, and the horizontal control goes. And he's like, and everybody at home will get up and slap their TVs. It'll be hilarious. I felt like that's what was happening. I was like, yeah, I think that he wants people to watch this movie twice to understand how funny it is.
And we've watched it three times now.
Well, maybe four.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
It's worth it, though, and we keep finding new things. And at the end, I just laughed so hard. And I guess the interesting thing about this movie, When we first started watching this, I was quite worried about Tom Bateman's character, Trevor Viking Calcott, I guess.
Yeah.
I was worried about his character because I thought it was just a kind of bland dude pulling a bit. But the more that we spent time with Viking, the more I began to like Tom Bateman's character.
Well, and then we watched Behind Her Eyes with him in it, and he's just completely different. And I think we realized exactly what he's pulling off in this movie.
He's good. And I was worried about him at first, because these are movies where
he's so over the top.
You need that. And also, though, the actors can't be winking at the camera
in
these movies. That would make this fall apart. And they don't do that, but they're still playing very heightened characters. So it's a tightrope to walk.
I thought that he was kind of playing, not to make the reference again, but he was almost playing like a Batman villain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where he's bigger, he's larger in life. He's almost doing Jack Nicholson from Batman.
He's just shooting his henchmen.
Shooting his henchmen. You know, he's got a very strict code to this vibe, but it doesn't make any sense to anybody else. Right, mm-hmm. and he's just chewing the scenery like 10% less than Jack Nicholson was.
A drug dealer who hates sugar.
Yeah,
and he believes in gut
health.
Well, I was gonna say, like Mark, I think you and I should do a challenge where we, for a month, live on his diet.
That sounds expensive. Like, that's a lot of meat.
I would do it.
Almonds, avocado, and steak, like every day.
I would do it. You want to?
Yeah, I just got to run that by my wife's meal plan for the family. It's like, well, you guys are doing your thing. I'm going to be over here eating a steak, almonds, and avocado for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I mean, that would be pretty good for us.
Not the steak part. All that red meat.
Yeah. The gut health, though. Our gut health.
Our gut health would be through the roof.
Oh, with your cholesterol.
Yeah, with my cholesterol. But I was really worried because I do think there are movies sometimes. You remember this, Adam. I don't know if you remember this, Megan, but in the 90s after Pulp Fiction came out,
yep.
There was just a plethora of Pulp Fiction knockoffs where it was people saying dialogue that they thought they were looking amazing while saying this dialogue, and they were just acting like they were cooler than life. But that wasn't the charm of Pulp Fiction. It was the script, it was the action, it's performances. But people were trying to mimic it, and it felt like people were mimicking it. So I was a little worried, but Bateman really sells it, and I like him as a villain. I like that he gets his hands done. I really like his scene with William Forsythe, Wingman, where he's just like, "That's how you do it, guys. Like, that's how you get it done. Hey, I can make whoa."
That was a good one.
I'll never get that back.
Yeah.
Oh.
I for a second thought that he was there with you.
That will never happen again.
You pull off a really good Scotsman or Welshman doing a nasal gangster accent.
And the nasal gangster accent didn't get to me on this one. I liked it. No. It seemed like a good. It's like, oh, I just lost it. Dang it. I should have kept going. I should have used that accent the whole episode, and I could have done it, but I stopped and I lost it.
So I want to say though, I've always submitted to the fact that if you get in a fight with somebody, and I think we've talked about this before in a couple episodes, Mark, it's not necessarily who's the better fighter, and it's not necessarily who's the strongest. It's whatever guy cares about the other person the least. Right? Like, if you and I got ourselves into like a Captain Kirk and Spock situation where we were on a planet and we're like, you guys fight each other. It's not going to be a very entertaining fight because I'm like, I don't want to hurt Mark, and I would trust that you wouldn't want to hurt me, but we got to fight for these people. So like, oh, it's going to be – we're going to be pulling the punches a little bit. And I think that's one thing that even though he's a tired old man, Liam Neeson's character has no care for anybody. Like, he sees them as not human almost when he's destroying them all, and that goes in even when he's getting rid of the bodies. So I think that's what makes up for his like lack of training. It's just you're no longer human to me. You're just garbage.
Yeah, the only one he ends up caring for is Trevor's son, which is such a touching moment after this movie of death and just comedy about death. And this little boy just wants attention and he wants to be read to, even if it's from a snowplow book, and snuggle with someone who's not insane.
Yeah,
the snowplow reading thing was my favorite beat of the movie.
It's so touching.
Right.
The editing is excellent too, because they're sitting and then they're laying down. It's a really masterful, quick edit that it shows time is. That's why I love good editing in a movie. It's okay, time has gone by. I immediately know what's going on.
And the kid immediately snuggles in his armpit, and then he just relents and takes off his glasses.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
Yeah. Now, how long do you think Laura Dern was on this movie set?
5 minutes.
Yes.
Right, I guess
she was so fast on this movie. It is just like the scene where he discovers she's gone. She moves so quickly, the hangers are still moving in her wake.
In and out.
Yeah, I was like, oh, sweet, Laura Dern's in this movie. I love Laura Dern. She's gonna be, and then she was gone.
I like that. She probably just wanted to hang out with Liam Neeson. And
well, I think if she wanted to hang out with Liam Neeson, she would have been there for more than a day.
No, but I don't think she wanted to play the wife in it.
It was really cold there.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think she just showed up to go skiing, and. I mean, some people take movies in locations to go skiing, surfing. Like, hey, this is a free payday. I'm going to go take this film. So I think she showed up, skied, and I mean, listen, she is...
She wanted a weekend in the Canadian Rockies, subbing for the American Rockies.
Her presence in this
movie... As one does.
...leads to the best line in the movie. So there is a scene where Mustang, played by Dominic Lombardozzi, who... was in The Wire, one of my favorite shows. You've heard about it, me talk about it for years, and I butchered his name. But he walks up to Trevor, or Viking, and he shows Viking a picture. And Viking goes, great, now we know that he bangs a hippie. Like, he's like, no, that's where he works. I just love that line.
That's fantastic.
Viking said that. It just made me so happy.
Which in itself is such a good and deep setup. There's so many callbacks throughout this movie, and that's a great one because Mustang's his boyfriend or husband, I don't know if their relationship was secret or not, but he was killed in an earlier scene, and now he has betrayed him by finding the workplace and setting him up to go be killed by the rival gang. And it's such deep, good, long play.
Yeah, and you could miss it, too. It's not, hey, guys, look it. I'm a big-time traitor doing this. I like that I like that that's subtle. I like his character. And another one of my favorite parts in this movie is with Mustang, where he's eating Fruity Pebbles with the kid, And he's like, hey, I need some help with my fantasy football team. And the kid's like, you have 4 Cleveland Brown players. He's like, you got to support the home team. He's like, I can't help you. Like, that was such a funny. It's such.
I want to watch a spinoff where that kid gets kidnapped by, like.
Each week?
No, not each week. I'd watch that show, though. But, like, by some mid-level thugs in an Irish pub in Jersey just for his football knowledge. So they're betting on, like, the Flyers games and stuff, and they're like, come on, kid, like, who you got this week? And he's like, here's the rundown, and he's got, like, a savant level knack for gambling, and then Liam Neeson needs to go to Jersey and rescue the kid.
Whoa.
Isn't there a scene later where his team is winning because he did swap out some of his players, and the kid goes, what about loyalty?
Yeah, he learned from him. So you know what happened? I played fantasy football in a league for years.
Really?
You know about all this. and I drafted...
Sounds like Megan's a big fan of fantasy playing.
How much fantasy football goes on?
I drafted Green Bay Packers players excessively because that's my team. And right. I lost every year because I just was so loyal to the Packers. But then my first year where I went, I'm going to try to win this year. And I drafted no Green Bay Packers players. I mean, maybe like a first round pick. I won the league because I just stopped taking 14 Green Bay Packers players for my draft.
See, and like, again, we've known each other for a while, Mark. If I was like, if you're like, hey, come play fantasy football with me and my buddies, I'd be like, well, I'm going to worry about Mark because he's going to pick a funny team just to be funny and he's not going to win.
Oh, no.
Because that's, but it sounds like you go for blood now in the fantasy football.
This is very different. It's a different world. Mark has a trophy sitting here from fantasy football. Do you know what his team's name is?
What's his team?
It is Kurt Russell's beard.
Kurt Russell's beard. I don't know if I like fantasy football, Mark.
No, I'm pretty. So you know what's interesting?
He's not mean, but he definitely picks squads. He sets them up to win.
Yeah, I don't. All right. I just stopped making sexy picks, and I just kind of said, well, you know what? I'll try doing this. And last year, I went to 3 finals in my 3 leagues, so it's pretty good.
Okay, Mark, I got a question for you. Yeah. And Megan. Fucking Megan. Sometimes, like, Mark and I do so many of these, and then when Megan's here, it's so great, but I my cadence is like, Mark, and I feel like I'm leaving Megan, I have a question for you, and Mark, you can listen as well. How would you feel if on New Year's Eve we did a Hollywood fantasy draft where we picked a team of 10 actors, and then we devised a point system, so every movie they're in the next year, you get like 10 points. If they survive the movie, you get 20 points. If they die in it, you lose 5. If it gets an Oscar nomination, like if we had a fantasy Hollywood draft.
I'm in.
That's fun.
Sounds
like
good
that.
To me. Let's do it. Right? I'm taking Jim Varney, number one, Kurt Russell, the Sharks from Deep Blue Sea.
Hey, I'm going to take 6 months to plan this. Calm yourself.
Michael Pena.
I'm going to take computer de-aged Mark Hamill.
I feel like Gal Gadot is a good bet, but she's starting to do Netflix movies, so that's trouble.
Oh, who are we saying had a big year recently? Jamie Dornan.
Oh, yeah. Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar and Wild Mountain Time.
And he had another one, too.
You want to hear something, Adam?
Oh, yes.
2021 with Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar and Loki. It's having a wonderful year for jet skis. Just giving you a heads up on that.
I like what's happening here.
So going back to Cold Pursuit, I also really love the relationship between Gip and Kim Dash, because the two cops in town.
Yeah.
I love his reaction to Emmy Rossum calling up that guy in town and just like, well, if you get me this information now, then I read it. Then later on, you can come over. And she's like, oh, there's an avalanche. I'll be calling right back. And the guy just looks at her with just...
He is so upset on behalf of the person he doesn't know. And earlier, he's so upset over her contacting him even. And she's like, I just figured out something you haven't figured out in 30 years. And you care more about this guy.
Also, this is kind of the gone in 60 seconds, the one situation where you have your hero and your villain. And then there's just some cops there getting in the way.
Yeah. Delroy Lindo and Oliphant.
Completely not threatening. Just part of the story.
Right?
And they don't even come into play at the end, which I love.
No, they're somewhere else doing something else.
Emmy Rossum, though, gets the best line. We got a child in a snowplow. heading down to Keogh.
Right? Snowblower. I love Gip's line, how long were you two lovers?
There's so many quick quips in this movie that you're not ready for, that just come out of nowhere, that, again, a second viewing is almost a must.
In a story with so many characters, and honestly, most of them die, but you really enjoy all the little bits with each group of characters. Like, there's the two White Bull henchmen who are supposed to kidnap Ryan from his school, and they're so invested in their whatever their BS is that they're doing that they don't notice that Liam Neeson swoops in and takes the kid.
Yeah, they're worried about antibiotics in case a child bites them.
Oh yeah, their props are tape, a taser, and antibiotics in case a kid bites you. And they're worried about this lady with this little foo-foo dog over on the side saying they have seen rats that are bigger, and they're just such idiots.
Yeah, they're really kind of playing that, you know, goofus and gallant kind of situation. Now, Megan and Mark, if you want to play along, the nicknames of the henchmen in this movie are incredible. We can set that going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say there's like, you can kind of write, like, I have a list here, like Wingman and Speedo and Limbo and Sly and Shiv and Smoke. You know, there's a lot of, you know, the Eskimo. There's things that your mind can kind of figure out. Yes, the guy's named Shiv. You probably shivved a guy in the joint. Got that name, right? Sly probably went through like a Rambo phase and got that name. How does one get the gangster name? Your best guess. How does the guy get the gangster name Windex?
He's clean. He's efficient. He cures everything.
He's clean. He's efficient. Okay. Okay, I guess so.
When you think about Windex, you think about this will do the job. Like, there's no... I've never doubted Windex.
Windex gets the multi-purpose, gets right? the job done. Maybe he's a Renaissance man. Many talents.
Windex means efficiency to me.
You can use Windex on anything.
Yeah. Mouthwash. Banaka.
I just thought it was from throwing people through windows.
Oh
yeah.
And then he cleans.
That would be the more cinematic approach.
And then he cleans the windows after he's thrown them through, the person through.
That's right. You got a bloody guy here, but no blood on the window at all. Shards of glass are clean.
How did Windex get caught? Well, he stayed 4 hours after he threw somebody through a window and cleaned the glass.
He's got one of those sprayer ones that you attach to a hose and you just hose it down.
So your talent... Oh, man. I tried to do that accent. So you're telling me. Oh, I've lost it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what's crazy? When Megan referenced the pressure washer that you attached to a hose... All I immediately saw was Bruce Willis and the Jackal spraying off his van he painted to get it to change colors.
Oh, yeah. And then blowing up Jack Black. I thought you were going to say you were just thinking about a bread store.
No. No, again, Mark, in Canada, we call those bakeries. I don't know.
All right, so how about this? Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will talk more about bread stores. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And Megan, when you go on hunting trips, what do you talk about with the people during these trips?
Hunting? On this week, Hot Topics with Cold Pursuit.
Yeah. Elway or Manning?
Who's the greatest QB?
Yeah.
Deion Sanders.
I love that part where he goes, Elway, and he shoots him anyway. On the dresses.
He agrees with him. Yeah. That is such a good scene. I think from the moment that he walked in there, I was looking at you and I was like, there's going to be blood in this place. Look at all the white dresses.
Oh, right? Like that?
But you're so looking forward to it, too. Because just like, yes.
So Sean Connery as James Bond would always like, he'd be there, then boom, a joke would happen. Then he'd, boom, and he wouldn't see it coming. And Roger Moore, he'd be like, he'd walk in and be like, I'm going to tell you a joke. This is what the joke's going to be about. And then here's the joke. And so you're like you say, you know it's coming. You're waiting for it. And it doesn't disappoint. And as soon as he walked into like the store with the dresses and you knew he was armed, you're like, I know it's going to happen. I don't know how we're going to get there, but I know it's going to happen. And it's going to be amazing. And knowing didn't make it any less amazing.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't hold your hand. It... you're in on the joke, but then it doesn't. It's interesting. It lets you in on the joke, but right. It doesn't hold your hand with it as well. That's why I dig it. Like, that's why I think it was so smart to bring the director over with this movie. And can we 30 seconds? Let's talk about this real quick. I think this movie's tomato meter score was up in the 90s. Liam Neeson said what he said. Horrible timing. No idea what he was thinking. The movie immediately dropped into almost rotten territory. It's back up to 69, and then it tanked the opening weekend, and then it was quickly out of theaters. So it's just a bummer that all that transpired to hurt this movie, because without that controversy, I think this movie would have been really appreciated with audiences.
Yeah, when you look it up, too, there's not much on it. There's not a whole lot talking about it. There's only a few articles about that and the red carpet. And then there's nothing. So we are trying to rectify that right now.
Yeah.
We're taking it back.
His timing. It's like, Liam, come on. Like, if I produced this movie and directed it, and then I heard Liam Neeson's story, they canceled the red carpet. Like, it's like, come on, man. It's just... But it's a bummer, because this is a movie that... I think it should
be cherished.
It's something special. Because... It isn't what you think. And I think it provides enough jokes to keep the movie fresh. I mean, at the end when Avalanche flies into the snowblower and just the chaos at the end, the child blowing the snowblower. I mean, he kidnaps the kid and they form a nice bond. I dig it. I like that there wasn't much drama between Laura Dern and Qui-Gon and what's her character from Last Jedi?
Holden
and Qui-Gon drama. So, and also, Julia Jones, she plays someone in The Mandalorian as well, in the first season, the Seven Samurai episode. I don't know if you remember that with the AT-AT. A lot of Star Wars people in here.
A lot of Star Wars happening right now.
I want to see Emmy Rossum. Emmy Rossum.
In Star Wars?
Could be good in the Star Wars world.
Yeah, why not?
She's cheeky. She can pull it off.
She should play Mara Jade.
Who's that?
Luke Skywalker's wife in the extended universe originally.
Ooh.
Ooh. So then what?
Yeah.
She's cool. And she's funny in this. I liked her in this. I liked her dealing with Gip. Like, it just made me happy in this. But
she's so earnest. She wants to do her job right. He doesn't really care. He wants to give the locals a pass.
Does he call her Dirty Harry?
He makes her go write a traffic ticket instead of writing up the local kids for smoking pot.
In the original film, the cops are much more bungling, and the guy was trying to write a ticket from his car, and he opened up his car door, whacked another car, threw the thing on there. And so one of the biggest differences I think the In Order of Disappearance is much more bleak, and it has some very nasty moments. But one thing I like is that in the 2014 film, which stars Stellan Skarsgård, which is pretty neat, and also Tormund is in there from Game of Thrones. He's Santa. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I do like that in this one, Aya, she dodges the punch and then grabs Viking's balls. Because in Order of Disappearance, he just levels her. And then I know that his crew looks at him like he's insane. And then watching the actor, who I remember loving him in Kon-Tiki, so it was cool seeing him get this role. But they didn't play it like it was funny. Everyone looked at him mortified, but they also wanted laughs out of it. So it was a nice change of pace that Aya in this one dodged a terrible punch and then got a good nut grab in there.
She's got a toughness to her, for sure.
She's cool.
When she scares him in the bathtub.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So, but when we were talking about how we're bringing it back and giving this movie the praise it deserves, I was going to say, this movie is unlike any other movie except for Order of Disappearance, which is it exactly like.
Exactly, right? If I was being redundant with you, I didn't know if you had watched it. I just love
that. No, that's good.
I just really like that they... Like, in the opening shots, I went, hey, this is that. I was like, hey, I've seen that shot. And Megan, you read about the original, right? What were they saying about the original?
I think that they had a budget, and they were really doing what they could with the budget. This was a much larger budget movie, the 2019 version. So the director, in an extremely brief interview, made the comment that they were doing what they could. So you would have someone stealing stuff from their grandma's house to put on the walls in the movie because they had no money.
I love that. I love that.
And you could tell, too, and I like the sort of the sign language, the hand. So it's like he had little, in each cube, he had hands doing a symbol of sign language in his thing. But you could tell they just grabbed cheap things from wherever they could. But it still looked good, I would say. Yeah. I still dug it. And I do think the one thing I appreciate the most of an Order of Disappearance is the suitcase gag, where they put a lot more emphasis on dragging a suitcase out of a 2-foot high blizzard.
Wingman's wife at the funeral. It's funny in the 2019 version just because it's her pink suitcase stands out, but they really could linger on it a bit more.
Yeah. Because they let her just walk away, and in Order of Disappearance, she's having trouble. But I do like how she's treated in Cold Pursuit. I do think, clearly...
She puts her hand up to the glass when she realizes he's being taken away.
She's meant to be a little over the top, but, she tells him to take off his shoes. That's fair. You have a nice home, and Liam Neeson tracks in with his boots. And then he sits down, and she knows that he's a former criminal, and this is a criminal coming into the house, or brother. And I just think... they seem to like each other. I like their relationship in this. And once again, it's just a case of characters you like. I don't know. It's neat.
Well, I think too, it's a very real world, because you'll meet people and you're like, how are they together? but they're genuinely happy together.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you see here, where it's like from the outside, from the visitor's point of view, you're like, oh, that marriage seems sketch at best. but they're both just super content. And you're like, yeah, well, if that's, we'll float your boat, have at her.
Yeah, he went to Buster, and he ended up married.
Which is the classic love story, right? Like, that's you hear
one
that every day.
One for the ages, yes.
Right.
I do like, too, that he just gives it to Viking, and he just,
he lies about the whole thing, and it's great. So, that's the narrative sort of structure of this I really enjoy about this movie. I was thinking about it at the very beginning, getting excited for what all it sets up, how the fact that from the beginning, Liam Neeson is upset that his son has been killed, and he's out there just taking people out, trying to find who's the next person, killing them. And these two different groups of criminals think it's another group of criminals or the cops coming after them. They just don't even suspect.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he's so off the radar.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Wingman Coxman, Nels' brother, throws him off the trail because, you know, they get a name. And then they go and kill him, and they think it's done. And it's still going, and people are still dying.
Mm-hmm. And that's the perfect...
It's just so much fun. It keeps it going through the whole movie.
With everybody dying like this, it's just fun, right, Megan?
It's just so enjoyable.
I mean, the deaths in this are so funny.
But again, I think that keeps the movie from getting bloated, because people are dying so fast. They have such interesting little parts, mm-hmm. and then they die. And then we get more people.
I love the death of Speedo, and I know this doesn't sound great, but he gets choked.
And he completely underestimates Nels.
Coxman stops choking him, thinking he's dead, and then he goes, and then he has to choke him again. It's just so brutal and dark and just black humor.
And he has all those rings on his fingers.
So many rings. I don't understand the rooftop snow party in Denver during winter.
You've never had a rooftop snow party, Mark?
Well, no.
We're from Florida.
Yeah, even when I was in Wisconsin, I was 7, so that would have been weird. So it's... Yeah.
Tell us, is it a thing, Adam?
Heaters.
No, you bundle up, right? And you're definitely like not warm, but the cool the cool thing about a rooftop snow party usually you get that?
Yeah.
Is there's usually a nearby snowbank that you can jump off of the roof onto.
Oh.
And you would get drifts so big, like, where you could toboggan off of your roof onto a snowdrift, and you could right down to the road. Like, it was incredible.
I mean, one might guess that the crowd that was up there is probably also consuming enough drugs and alcohol. They're not too concerned about the weather.
They're not feeling much.
They're in just shirts and jeans. And they're up high. On a roof. Yeah.
So
we obviously don't party very much.
I grew up in Nipigon, Ontario, where it's very, very, very cold. 40, 45 below is like a winter day. That is not a normal thing. And every year, somebody would lose their toes or ears because they were drinking out in the cold and just like fell asleep or just didn't feel how cold they were. Went to the hospital and like, oh yeah, your toes are frozen. We got to cut them off. Or your ear, the top of your ears are frostbite. We got to cut like it, that's the thing that would happen if you drank outside.
Whoa. So these people, there's a lot of toes being gone in this Denver rooftop party.
If they're not careful.
Do you want to hear something neat about Raul Trujillo in this movie who plays Thorpe, the main enforcer for White Bull?
Yeah.
So yeah. He's also a dancer, and he has a dance troupe, and he's been acting for a long time. And one of my favorite movies is New World, directed by Terrence Malick. I've made you watch it. You're looking at the Criterion right to your right now.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful film.
Mm-hmm.
He choreographed all the dances in New World
to make it
as authentic as possible. And I love him in this movie when he's getting the hotel registration. She's like, oh, yeah, we don't have any reservations going on right now. And I just like, he's like, I will kill you. Or I will.
Do you know what I could do to you on Yelp?
Yeah, I will destroy you on Yelp. Like, on it's Yelp. Just the delay into the on Yelp is just a beautiful thing. It's just so cheeky.
Let's talk morality here for a minute. Liam Neeson's son dies of a heroin overdose that he did not inflict on himself, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think he got himself into that lifestyle, and that was kind of a byproduct of the choices that he had made?
Yes. Now,
I thought that he didn't know about it, though. Didn't his buddy say he didn't know anything about it?
I thought that they knew about the drugs, but that he didn't know that the other guy took some of the drugs.
Right. That's the way I read that, he wasn't squeaky clean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, as they say, all of the answers to life can be found in Lord of the Flies, so maybe we should have just studied that a bit more.
Why aren't we just doing that movie right now?
Oh my gosh.
No, and
Talk about a dark movie.
I think you're right, too. His quest for revenge. But see, that's the whole point of this movie, right, Megan? What the director was saying. It's pointless. His quest for revenge, he loses his son anyway. He didn't know his son to begin with. He didn't know nothing about his son. Then his wife leaves him because he just stops talking to her. Just stops completely, turns off. Then he just starts murdering people, which sets off a chain of events, which gets...
A chain of murders.
Like, White Bull and his crew get killed. I mean, and just more people get killed. And then it just cascades into a bloodbath of
I would call it, Mark, ready for this? A snowball effect.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Jeez, look at you.
Here all night, folks. I'm here all night. Now, writers.
Like Val Kilmer and Willow, correct?
Yes. Just like Val Kilmer and Willow.
You want to talk about morality? What about the part when Viking finds out that Ryan has been taken and he's throwing an absolute fit? He's hysterical. And his morality on the subject is you take a man's son, you call. He's so offended that no one has called in this kidnapping.
There's no ransom. Yeah. Where's the ransom?
It's amazing.
And you know what I love, too, is he went and killed that guy's brother based on no proof. And then he's mad that he killed a son. And now he's mad that his son was taken without a call.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the warped morality of these gangsters.
Yeah,
and
he's like, we killed a Native American, hung up wrongly, and hung him up on a sign for everyone to see. Oops.
And then the hitman shows up, gets 2/3 of his money because he thought it was half. That's what cops think. And then
and he's upset with the room because there's a convention in town.
And then Viking kills him because he made a deal with Coxman. So
he didn't honor his deal.
Exactly. So then he gets killed for not honoring a deal.
Or his grammar.
Oh,
right.
Gosh.
But it's classic, like, Yakuza stuff, right? Like, anytime that the Yakuza are involved in something, it's like, okay, well, like, honor is very important to us. And, like, how would you... Or even, like, Johnny Chang or Chan in Fast and the Furious, where it's like, you disrespect me in front of my family. That's the worst thing you could do. But it's like, but you're a criminal stealing DVD players and like committing murder. So like you're not in an honorable lifestyle. So how can honor be that important to you? It's a real like, you know, talking to the side of your mouth thing. And I find that both of these organized crime situations are exactly the same. They're like honor is the honor and rules. And like, there's a way you conduct business. This is how you do it. So you have to follow the rules while we're at a fault, not following rules that the society gives. You know what I mean? It's a real they're bad guys for a reason.
It's funny. And I love what Megan said too. I completely forgot about that with the son bit. And it's just, the guy forgets that he killed his son.
Yeah.
I do say though, it hurts when White Bull's crew is killed. Cause I love when they're having snowball fights.
On the side of the mountain.
The costume designer.
They have a lot of fun together.
Yeah. I love that group. What I like about what the costume designer said that is Viking. If you look at everybody, Viking's the best dressed of all of them. And he won't allow any of his other henchmen to look as good as him. And they all have to follow a sort of uniform. Whereas White Bull, if you look at his crew, they're all individuals. And they have fur, and they have different outfits or flannels.
Or yellow gloves.
Yellow, right. Oh, that shot is so good. Beautiful shot.
Well, those are buckskin gloves.
And I just love that they are individuals in his gang. And
right.
Just the two of them meeting, and both men who lost sons end up living, but both of them are just wildly corrupt by this period of time. It's just
right.
I don't know. And look at, you know what's crazy too is Coxman shows up to Wingman, gets his brother killed to get revenge. So he gets revenge on this guy, but in the process, his brother dies, he loses his wife.
He doesn't get his son back. He doesn't gain anything.
Mm-mm.
Nothing.
You know what I kind of like, going back to the very beginning of the movie, he's giving his speech because he's, and another wonderful irony of this movie is he's Kehoe's citizen of the year. He sets off all of, I guess he does eliminate two rival criminal gangs, but.
That's going to open up a gang war, though.
But his quote in his speech, he says, "I picked a good road and I stayed on it." And that's how he became Citizen of the Year and had this life. But he abandons all of that when his son dies. And it's just so funny that that's where this starts.
Also, I've been alive for 40 years. And I've never heard of anybody ever getting a Citizen of the Year award. Like, is that a thing?
Oh, I've gotten it 3 times.
Well, that makes
sense. Meg got it 6 times.
I think Megan's just like, "Hey, Mark, your award came in the mail." And she's like, "Tee hee hee." You're like, "Oh, I got it again."
We awarded biannually in our house.
You set up a banquet with 200 people 3 times? That's impressive. You went for lobster.
Oh, no. Yeah. What did you eat?
Is that why I saw the second mortgage on our house one time?
Probably.
I have a great wife.
Yeah, that's the citizen mortgage.
That was a great...
Yeah, I just...
Oh, man, everyone sang Sweet Caroline at my thing, and...
Can you imagine the pressure of being named Citizen of the Year?
No, because I've had it 3 times.
Right. So right. I'm not going to fight, but I don't have that experience. But they say, like, if you win the lottery, don't tell anybody, because then all of a sudden you're going to have more friends in the world to do with. But imagine if, like, well, that guy's the Citizen of the Year. Clearly he can help me move my fridge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Because, oh, what happened to Citizen of the Year?
Yeah, you're going to say no?
Mark blew out his back the first and fifth times.
Yeah, and then I don't have to do it anymore because people are like, man, Mark hurt himself for the rest of his life being Citizen of the Year. So now he doesn't have to. So,
right.
Yeah, I blew out my back being Citizen of the Year.
I think if you blow out your back being Citizen of the Year, that qualifies you for Citizen of the Millennium.
Yeah, Citizen for life.
That's why I keep getting that award every year. It's great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, parades, everything over here. It's beautiful. Now, what do you think about, like, okay, how about this? This is a movie that is just loaded with little beautiful things. The map of tiny, pretty things.
Tiny, pretty things, yes.
I love it. Is it perfect thing or
perfect?
Perfect. The map of tiny, perfect things is so good. Ah! Okay, this is what I want you two to do. I want you to pick your 3 favorite tiny moments.
Ooh.
In this movie. So, Adam, who wants to go first? Who has one off the top of their head?
Well, ladies first.
Ladies first.
What am I going to pick?
There's so many
good ones.
There's so many tiny things.
You know something that I love about Liam Neeson's character, and this is a tiny moment, is he is out there killing people, trying to find the root cause of his son's death. And in one scene with Santa, where he kills him, he takes the Coke, and he just gets rid of it. He cuts it all open and throws it to the wind, and he gets it in his face, and he's like, whatever. But he has no interest in selling it, no interest in giving it back to them. Just he gets rid of the Coke and just dumps it on the snow.
Yeah, and did get a lot in his face. He was going to be Corky Romano in it, for sure.
Wow.
All right, what do you got, Adam? Who's your...
All right. it's just her exercise outfit when he comes in.
Yes.
Like, is it 1987 perpetually in her mind? Like, just that costume detail, I was just like, I just burst out laughing when he walked in to have, like, a very serious conversation and she was in that getup. I lost it.
I love that character. She makes me so happy.
Yeah.
She was good. All right, Meg, what's your next little tiny moment?
I had a funny quote written down here when they're talking about Viking is a bath and his ex-wife or his not quite ex-wife scares him. And he says he's paid for computers so he doesn't have to go to anti-bullying seminars, all this stuff. And he says, that's the privilege of my business. And she says, you're not a businessman, Trevor. You're a criminal. And that's just so, yes.
So cutting.
She gets to him, doesn't she?
So another piece of that relationship, it occurred to me while we were watching it, all their interactions. I think he really still likes her. He just hates that she hates him.
Yeah. There are people that like being liked, right? They need to be liked.
And she does not like him.
No.
She does not like him at all. And I think that, like, he just wants to be impressive, whether it's to his enemies or his henchmen or his ex-wife or his son. He wants to be impressive, and she thinks he's the least impressive person on the planet.
And she makes it so obvious. And then the scene where she ducks below his punch, she obviously knows his actions.
Oh, yeah. She telegraphed that.
Mm-hmm. So that was going to be my second little pretty moment, was the punch duck.
Oh, good.
I love a good punch duck.
It's so it just, good.
It takes the, like, oh, I'm a jackass. I'm going to hit my wife. She's going to have a black eye for the rest of the movie. Like that Brad Wesley of it all. He just takes all that power away in 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't even abuse me properly.
Oh, man.
I love that.
All right, Meg, what's your third and final?
Oh, man, there's just so many good little things. I think I really just love the gags between the two cops.
Yeah, just the looks.
I think I predicted it when we were sitting there, and she gets the information from her ex in whatever town he's in, and she goes, there's an avalanche. It's just so good.
And just the look of disgust on his face.
Oh, he's so disappointed. Gills.
Yeah.
So, Gip, he's just so upset by her doing that.
Oh, it makes me happy. All right, third and final.
And so we've talked about this before, but the juxtaposition of, like, he's so concerned about his son's diet. Like, so concerned.
Oh, yeah.
And the next scene, he's eating Fruity Pebbles with Viking.
And he's digging through his lunch.
Yeah.
Out snacks, and the guy's like, I thought it'd be good for him.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved that moment.
I got something fun for you, too. I haven't told Megan. I haven't told you. Since this is our I think you said this is our hypothermia trilogy. What did you say? This is our mountain
Frostbite
trilogy, our mountain madness trilogy. I want you two to do a Violence on the Mountain draft. So you each have to draft 5 movies. 3 movies, because this might get excessive. 3 movies that feature mountaintop violence.
Oh, jeez.
All right. I feel like I was born for this. All right. Are you ready for this?
Yeah. All right. So, you know what? You gave Megan first pick on Tiny Pretty Thing, so I'm going to give you first one on this.
I'm going to go very literal here, Mark. You said it. Mountaintop violence. I'm going Return of the King.
Whoa. Mount Doom.
Mount Doom.
You're going Mark Fantasy Football right here.
I'm going Mark Fantasy Football because he's got his finger bitten right off.
I'm just going to go for the cheap shot and take Cliffhanger.
Ugh. Ugh. That's rough. Right? Like,
make it.
Like, oh, okay. Ooh. Okay. Okay. I thought that was... no, it's fine. It's fine. I'm so flustered right now.
You're short circuiting.
Yeah,
it's like the time we picked Battleship off of Tom's team.
Oh man, Tom Trezimer, he's a guest on the show, longtime friend, worked on him with many sets. His favorite movie is Battleship, And he and I did a draft, and for some reason, he did not... I gave him first pick, and he took maybe Dark Knight Rises first, and then I went Battleship. And he's like, you can't do that.
He was so flustered for a good 10 minutes.
And then, but then he went and picked the Total Ringer Squad and defeated me 90-10 in the poll. But it was worth it, because I got Battleship.
Okay. Does this count in your minds? Because I feel like at the last scene, they're in the mountaintops of Mars on Total Recall.
Isn't that a cavern? Don't they go underground?
Yeah, but I thought, weren't they looking out over like the horizon at the end when they put his hand on that thing and then the atmosphere changed and they're looking out above?
You know, I'm going to let you say yes or no on this one, Adam.
Oh, so I say that they're in caverns in a mountain on Mars. Total Recall.
Jeez Louise. Megan, you're in trouble.
What are you talking about? She gets a cliffhanger. She can beat me with one move.
Oh, what's a good another one? How about Vertical Limit?
There we go. You're spending a lot of time on cliffs here. That's what Megan's really going heavy cliff. She's really going mountain heavy.
I have a clincher though.
Uh oh.
It's a George Miller movie. It's The Man from Snowy River.
The Man from Snowy River. I love it.
Where he needs to prove he's man enough to live in the mountains. Because his dad dies and the mountain men kick him off the mountain and say, go be a man before you can live up here.
Oh, I like it. That's a good pick. Even it up a little bit. All right, Megan, you're up.
Mountains.
Mountains? What?
I don't know.
Megan just said mountains.
I'm ruminating on mountains.
She just said mountains, I think.
Mountains.
Well, so part of me, I can't remember if they're in a mountain, and I want to go Liam Neeson in The Gray. Is he in a mountain?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I just lost.
Whoa.
You know, talk about another surprising Liam Neeson movie. It was not at all what we expected, but it was still very interesting.
Yeah, I wish it had an ending.
All right, so Fellowship, Return of the King, Total Recall. I'm going to give you the remake. And The Man from Snowy River.
No, don't give me the remake. No! It's like, here's a gun with no bullets. That's what I'm saying.
So you don't specify.
Yeah. Well, you never told me.
Listen, Mark. You know what this is? This is when you're 7 years old and your buddy comes over to your house and you have one plastic sword to play with and you say, here, you can use the case as a sword. And you give him the plastic case, the sheath, and he says, that's a good enough sword for you. That's what you gave me. I said, Total Recall. And he said, here, you can have the sheath for it. Oh.
So we have Return of the King, Total Recall, and The Man from Snowy River versus Cliffhanger, Vertical Limit, and The Gray.
Exactly.
Now, Megan, I think Cliff Time, Megan wins this. But Return of the King is very strong. The Man from Snowy River and Total Recall has a decent amount of cliff work. Even though I feel like it's underground. But I let you have it because I trust you. And you're an honorable person. And I don't think you would pick anything unhonorable. So I support you 100% on this.
I appreciate that.
That's right. Well, this is going to be a close one. I really think this is going to be a good one here.
I'm excited.
Well, I just want to say thank you, man, for recommending. Oh,
what is everyone's favorite kill in the movie? Since we talk about so much death,
can I go first?
Oh. Yeah, Mark, you go first.
Yeah.
Thank you, Megan. Even though you brought it up, I'm saying Speedo. One thing I like about Speedo's death is that, being a bouncer for many years, I've seen a lot of punches land.
I love how this turns into, what was your favorite kill, to Mark being like, well, when I was Dalton in Roadhouse.
But here's the thing. When Liam Neeson punches somebody 5 times as hard as he can, he does maximum damage on the person's face. And that's what happens. I mean, your knuckles are... There's a scene where his knuckles are bloody after pulverizing the guy. And he's tired. In bar fights, if someone connects really good, there's going to be blood. And then everyone around is going to be tired because nobody's in shape in a bar during a bar fight. So I love that he's tired punching this guy. And the punches just feel, I don't know, watching this movie, it's very heightened. It's very hyper-realistic. But some of the violence really rings true to me, even if it's comical at times. So that opening kill with Speedo, between the joke with him choking him, the joke choke, twice, and then just the face pulverized from not 17 punches, but probably about 5. It felt very real to me. And so it put me in this interesting place where I went, this movie's for real, but it's also funny. But it goes there. So I kind of felt safe after that kill, because it was relatively grounded, but it was wickedly just mean and funny. So that's right. Why I'm going with it. And I know I didn't have to bring up Bouncing, but I guess what I love is he gets tired. Everyone gets tired fighting, except for Hobbs and Shaw. So it's just,
right.
I love how grounded it is.
And I was just joking, Mark. I just had to get a Roadhouse reference in there for Chris and Brad.
Oh, man, hurt pain does hurt. I never would say that about Dalton. Like, no. Pain is not weakness leaving the body. Pain makes you limp. So it's just, I got someone wedged behind a dartboard one. Like, we have those automated dart things, and there was a fight, and somehow a guy got jettisoned, and he got wedged behind a dart machine. So I had to pull him out from behind the dart machine, and I pulled my back out. So hearing pain is weakness leaving the body, or pain don't hurt, Dalton's never blown his back out. So I think
he's never got hit hard enough.
Yeah, exactly. He's never had to wedge somebody from behind a
dartboard.
Electronic dart machine.
He hasn't worked in a bar as tough as Mark has worked in.
That's right. Mm-mm. I mean, chicken wire. Shoot. Come on now.
We pray for chicken wire.
Yeah. In our day, bands would just catch beer bottles in their mouths.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's
my favorite. All right, Megan, what's your favorite kill?
For reasons that we already stated, I think, is it Limbo in the wedding dress shop?
Yeah.
It's just so good. Right. I mean, it's, you know it's coming, and you love every second of it.
He shoves that gun in his mouth, too. That's brutal. So,
that's my second favorite kill.
Ooh.
Because you know what's coming, but my favorite one is when you don't see coming at the very, very end with the snowblower, right? Just like, done. Just done.
Avalanche.
You don't see it coming the first time, and then the second time, we're sitting there going, oh, that's right, he dies. And you just sort of watch him glide in, and then you're so surprised.
Does white people care? Or is it just so random? Okay, I have a question for both of you, right? I'm Hank McCluskey. I am a vengeful snowplow driver. I've survived. You two are in there. You're both gangland members, all right? In the greater Toronto area.
Mo and Hodge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mo and Hodge. Mm-hmm. You survived the gunfight as well. One of your henchmen went gliding paragliding the day before. Somehow you just forgot about him. The next day you're in a massive snowblower, I don't know, what else, snowplow,
mm-hmm.
and your henchman, who you've known for years, is still hang gliding, probably frozen, but perfectly falls into the snowblower and is just pulverized. Are you, A, horrified, and you're going to have to call the family, you feel so terrible because you've known this person for a long time. B, you're kind of bummed and you're going to laugh about it later because it's so insane. Or C, you're just, that was amazing. Like, you're just thinking to yourself, that'll never happen again. A, B, or C?
Probably B.
I'd say somewhere in the B area.
Yeah.
I think, and Megan, stop me if I'm speaking for you, but we do run a tight ship, the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
But after the week that we would have had with all these shootouts.
That's what I was thinking.
We got to get a new crew from the ground up anyways.
Mm-hmm. And this so we is don't their line of one work, guy. Right? People and their family sort of expect they won't come back. And honestly, this is probably the least of his worries. He just escaped a massacre.
And also, too,
this is a justifiable accident.
When Avalanche's parents and family start yelling at you, you did this to him. You brought him into the life. You're like, listen, I sent him paragliding the day before to send him away. I did not know he would stay afloat for 24 hours and then fly directly into a snowplow that I was not driving. Like, it's not on you.
You can't really stop those things on a dime.
So you are directly responsible.
And I would reverse that whole conversation. If someone says that I brought him into the life, I'm like, listen, you're his parents. You let him in. Where did you go wrong, June? Like, I would call them by their first names real condescendingly, like.
Where did you teach him to paraglide?
Yeah.
I didn't, like, I just, it's, oh, man. It's beautiful.
Maybe if you hugged him more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He wouldn't feel the need to paraglide.
Get real touchy with books
as he fell asleep.
I gotta say, between this, I mean, this is an excessively long paragliding trip.
Mm-hmm.
And the bus van and get duped. These are some of the longest running implausible. If you ever watch it, Adam, I think you'll love it. Get duped. There's some two very long running gags that pay off beautifully. That would never, I don't think, work in the real world. I'm not a paragliding expert, but I love a good gag that pulls off, and that's what this movie does, and it's beautiful.
Okay, to end this episode, I'm going to give you guys a pitch. Now, I've given you a number of pitches before, and they have been tee-hee-hee, ha-ha, we're not really going to do it, but ha-ha-ha, that would be funny if we did. I'm being legit on this one, that I think Movies, Films, and Flicks needs to release what I'm going to propose to you guys in time for Christmas 2021. I'll produce it, but I want the three of us to do it. And we're going to release an album called Winter Lullabies.
Ooh.
And we're each going to record ourselves reading four technical manuals to snow removal vehicles.
Oh, it's like that Headspace app, or the one where Cillian Murphy is reading to you on a train in Ireland.
The Movies, Films, and Flicks sleep, what do you want to call it? Sleep guide? Or like,
we're going to call it
Winter Lullabies.
Frostbite Lullabies.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, I'm down.
So we have to pick a manual.
Yeah, you got to pick a manual of like a snowblower or a snowplow or some kind of snow winter. It could be a snowmobile, Mark, if you want to do a snowmobile, because I know you like movies that have snowmobiles in them. Mm-hmm. They're like jet skis for winter.
Wow.
And then I'll put background ambient music to it. I'll edit it together. We'll get some cover art going on, and then people can order them on moviesfilmsandflicks.com. And we'll sell for the Christmas season Frostbite Lullabies.
Love it. And can we get the Don't Bite the Knife shirts?
Yeah, the Don't Bite the Knife shirts are going to be the stocking stuffer of the year.
bite the knife.
Don't bite the knife.
Can I try one more thing before we get out of here?
Imagine I said no.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us today. Okay, here we go. So you're telling me that there's a guy out there, a snowplow driver. I sound more like the Joker. Okay, so you're telling me that there is a guy out there driving a snowplow, running over my people, paragliding. Nope, that's not him.
Well, you gotta keep it in there.
No, I'm keeping it all in there. But one more time, get super nasally. So you're telling me. So what we got here is that there's. So you're saying, wait, I'm an all vegan diet. No, I can't do it. I lost it.
It was so good the first time.
Oh.
I know that in amongst there, I have found my new ringtone. Not just for Mark, but for everybody.
Can't do it. I had it. I had it and I lost it.
That's fantastic.
Only had to blow the bloody doors.
Yeah. Wait, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors? Oh gosh. All right, so thank you for joining me, you two. Thank you, Adam Hodgins. Oh, tell them about your channel.
Oh, yeah. So we're still doing the Go Figure thing. We're on YouTube and Instagram, and where we fix up vintage toys from the 80s, and we're having a blast doing it. So come check it out.
Love it. Megan, anything you want to pick?
Yeah, I do. I have a thing. I have a thing for you, I found. So we mentioned the music and how it's really fun because it's this almost like hijinksy music that does not connect with the scenery at all. George Fenton, British, lots and lots of awards, has done stuff with the Attenboroughs, both the documentary style and a Gandhi movie that was huge and Oscar nominated, 100 plus films, lots of stuff you know. But the very exciting thing is in the bottom of his history, and it's a piece of trivia that Mark will love the most. His very first guitar listen was with a chimney sweep.
Ooh.
That's why he's so good.
It is.
Wow. That's beautiful.
George Fenton. Guitar lessons awesome. From Chimney Sweep.
I love that.
No wonder he can bust out into such great songs. Oh, life right? ain't nothing but misery, but I sweep, sweep, sweep.
He also did the music for Multiplicity.
Oh.
Sweet Home Alabama.
I was onto a pretty good song there. A good Chimney Sweep song.
I would buy your Chimney Sweep album.
Chimney.
I'm stuck in a chimney.
Do you know how they...
Won't you write a song for me?
I think your pitch is a little bit off, Mark. You should start by going, me, 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 me. To get your voice ready to go.
Me.
That's the Megan
move. I'm stuck in a chimney. Whoa, so won't you write a song for me?
Do it in the nasal voice.
And call the police officer.
I wanna have that music over top of the story that they tell in Gremlin.
Alright, let's get out of here, y'all. Thank you so much for joining me.
Always a blast.
Alright, so for me, Deep Blue Sea, and for Swift and Cliffhanger, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.